Coming up, I got S. Barahini and Jack Simone talking NBA Summer League. And first, Jack and I open up the show talking about Chris Paul going back to the Clippers and Marcus Smart heading to the Lakers. That's coming up right now. All right, now joining me is Jack Simone. Jack, you're back from Vegas. How you doing, man?
I'm good. I'm still recovering from the heat. I didn't get too sunburnt or too disgusting while I was out there, so I feel good. I'm happy to be back in Boston now. But thanks for having
just
me.
Just to be clear, you spent every day at Summer League. You were there every day. You're a psycho.
There was not a single day that I was not at the arena for Summer League. This is correct. I was there every single day. And the funny part is, when I was there, by the end of it, I was like, oh, this went by kind of quick. And I got back and I was like, wow, I'm exhausted. I need to go to sleep.
You probably slept like 12 hours. Yeah. I mean, not this year, but last year or whatever. I don't know. The year before that, some year I did the entire finals. And it was like 17 days on the road or something like that. God. I'm like, this is awesome. It's a memory for a lifetime. But boy, it is a lot doing the whole NBA Finals. And Summer League doesn't have the stakes that the NBA Finals do. But it's fun. I love Summer League. We'll talk later about some Summer League superlatives with players that stood out to us. But first, we're going to get to some news. Chris Paul is officially going back to the Los Angeles Clippers, continuing a year of reunions. Dame goes back to Portland. Chris Paul going to the Clippers, joining Bradley Beal in that backcourt. Bradley Beal is going to give Chris Paul his number three. No surprises there. But Jack, I think it's fascinating for the Clippers. You see the Thunder win the title, one of the youngest teams ever to win it all since the Blazers in the late 1970s with Bill Walton. And then you see the Clippers. They got James Harden. They got Kawhi Leonard. They got Chris Paul. They got this really old team, but it's a new look team. Because they flipped Norm Powell, they changed the front court, they signed Brook Lopez, they get John Collins in the trade for Norm Powell, and then they get Beal and Chris Paul. On paper, the Clippers look good, but they always look good on paper. But do you see any reason to believe that with this remade front court and back court, that this could be a year that things are actually a better result for the Clippers in the end?
I think it's all health dependent, as is always the case with the Clippers. I saw King of the Fourth Quarter do a YouTube video saying I put the 2025 Clippers in the Steph Curry era, basically like I put them 7 years ago when they were all in their prime, which I think is a funny joke. But I mean, like, if you think about past Clippers teams, right? You think about the need for a little bit more forward depth, a little bit more big man depth. You were rolling out guys behind Zubac that maybe you didn't trust as much. Brook Lopez, John Collins fill that need. And then you also add Bradley Beal in place of Norm Powell for as bad as the Bradley Beal discourse got, probably better, like overall, maybe. I mean,
way better.
Like I think people were so caught up in the contract, but like as a pure scorer, that is what Bradley Beal does. That is what he's always done. And so you bring him in, that's an upgrade. And then you also add Chris Paul, one of the best playmakers of all time, who played every game last season. Like, you want to talk about health concerns. That guy can help fix some of your health concerns, despite the fact that he's entering his 30th NBA season or wherever he's at right now. But, like, James Harden, Bradley Beal, Chris Paul is your backcourt depth, plus Chris Dunn, who's one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA.
Yes.
John Collins as a lob threat. I saw a tweet that was like, John Collins is going to get to play with one of the best lob passers of all time, no matter who's on the floor, with James Harden and Chris Paul. Then Zubac, who is close to a top five big man in the NBA, top five center in the NBA, like elite defender, elite rim runner, just incredible presence.
I had him all NBA. I like a lot of people ripped me for having him all NBA, but the dude was a dominant defender.
Yep.
He was a dominant post scorer, an elite screener, elite finisher. Like, what more do you want from your big besides shooting threes?
Then
I had Lopez who can space and play drop, and John Collins who can space and play a bit of lob. They just have. Continue with what you're saying.
And then, I mean, you want to talk about lobs, Derrick Jones Jr. off the bench, if we're really talking about it. Like, they have built a beautifully constructed team. It just happens to have an average age of, like, 40. But, like, it competed last year, and so why can't it compete again when you improve the roster? So, I'm in, and we haven't even talked, I haven't even mentioned Kawhi. I that is the big, like, cherry on top if he's healthy. It's almost like the Celtics when they won the title. It's like, oh, if Porzingis is healthy, he can help, right? Like, this roster is probably pretty good to compete in the West without Kawhi. They're not a title contender, but they're like pretty good playoff team. You add Kawhi, and that's where the can they compete for a title comes into play. So if Kawhi is healthy and is able to stay healthy, which huge if, then you could see the pathway for them. But regardless, they're going to be a very competitive team.
For sure. And Kawhi did stay healthy last year, and he had his 39-point game too, where he just was like, oh my God, like the Clippers, this might be the year. This might be the year they actually do it. He's 39 points, 15 of 19 in game two. Nobody on Denver could stop him. But he never, the rest of that seven-game series against Denver in the first round, he never really reached that level again. He had a lot of good games, but he didn't have those like Kawhi with the Raptors in their run that year types of games. He didn't have like those dominant games like he did earlier in his Clippers tenure before he would get hurt and flame out in the playoffs. But I think with Kawhi, if he stays healthy, big if, that's the biggest if for the Clippers, and if he's able to have more of those moments in the playoffs, then yeah, you have a chance. But I still think it all comes down to him. Like, you add Chris Paul, it helps. You add Bradley Beal, it helps. You shore up your front court, it helps. Like, I think the Clippers have a chance to be really freaking good. And on paper, again, on paper, doing a lot of work, I think on paper, they are a finals contender. But there's so many ifs with that team more than any other team, and more reasons for doubt because of recent history and, you know, history over the last 5-10 years. It's not just recent. That there's reasons to doubt them as like a lower tier contender, especially considering their age. But overall, I just think it's cool. You know, Chris Paul's going back to the Clippers. Sure. I think it would be so awesome if like they end up in the Western Conference Finals and they have a deep series against whoever, the OKC, it's young versus old. Like, how cool would that be? If Chris Paul's got a chance, right? That'd be awesome.
Oh yeah. I mean, Chris Paul against the Thunder, like not only young versus old, but his former team, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, yes, who he mentored, everything like that. I think the Clippers have a chance. I don't know what the percentage chance is, but if you have Kawhi Leonard, James Harden, and the roster they've constructed, you're going to give yourself a chance if Kawhi's healthy. And like you said, that's a big if. But I mean, I would like to see it. I like Chris Paul. I like these guys. I have no problem with them. I know Philly's probably not happy that James Harden is like working cooperatively with the Clippers now, but it's nice to see him finding success somewhere. So I'm in on the Clippers. I don't know if they can beat the Thunder when healthy. I don't know if they can beat some of these other powerhouses like the Rockets when healthy, but they've given themselves a chance. So that's a good thing.
Well, and then the Los Angeles Lakers made their latest addition as well this offseason. They signed Marcus Smart, free agent from the Grizzlies and former Celtic. It's going to be weird seeing Marcus Smart. Yeah. I get the jersey over my shoulder. So Marcus Smart signed that one for my dad when he was going through chemo. And Smart is a Celtics legend. And he had his Lakers presser and he's like, you know, what do you think Celtics fans are going to react like? And he goes, I'm expecting a lot of boos. I'm expecting a lot of hate. Jack, I'm not.
No.
I think Smart is always going to be beloved by Celtics fans.
I think it would be different. I think if Marcus Smart left under his own volition and then ended up in LA, maybe. They traded him. And I think Celtics fans are smart enough to understand that. I mean, listen, I grew up in Mass. Marcus Smart, when I was growing up, was one of my favorite players. Like, if not my favorite player ever. Like, I loved Marcus Smart. I was obsessed. It was hard not to be if you grew up in the Boston area when Marcus Smart was playing. And so, to see him play for the Lakers, I don't get as caught up in rivalries as maybe some other people. Seeing the purple and gold on Marcus Smart is weird. It's so weird. Seeing him in his press conference today wearing the Lakers hoodie, it was like, oh, this is actually happening. Now, I mean, if you want to take a step back and say, like, for the Lakers, pretty good, right? Like, I don't know how much left he has in the tank. He hasn't been able to stay on the court the last couple seasons. But a fine defensive piece to put next to LeBron and Luka, like, you like the swing for the price they got him at. If you live in Boston or Massachusetts or New England, you're probably not thrilled. That's certainly a very weird sight to see.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you're kind of happy for him from afar if he's able to stay healthy and has a good year, but it's like you'd rather it not be with your number
literally
one
anywhere
rival.
Literally anywhere else. Yes, exactly.
But ultimately, man, like, I think for the Lakers, they lose Dorian Finney-Smith, and I felt like the offseason started out really poorly. It's like, oh my God, you just traded for this guy, and then he walks to Houston because you didn't want to pay him. But then they get Ayton on a cheap contract after buyout. They get Jake LaRavia, who I think is an underrated player, really good two-way guy, good rock solid, versatile defender, good shooter, could do a little bit off the dribble. And then Marcus Smart. Like, Smart, like you said, he has not stayed healthy. He hasn't even been anywhere as close to what he was in his prime defensively in recent years while dealing with those health issues as well. I mean, he played 20 games the first year with Memphis, and last year he played 19 for Memphis before playing only 15 for Washington. So he's barely playing at all ever since he left Boston, ever since he also won his defensive player of the year, he's not been the same on that level of the floor. But guys can have bounce back years. And if you're the Lakers, you're solely focused, if the goal is to win a championship on the 25-26 season, if Marcus Smart can play 65 games of really good, versatile defense, switchable guy, next to Jake LaRavia, like, I think that covers up the loss of Dorian Finney-Smith, adds a little bit of extra playmaking juice as well on that team. Not that you really need it with Luka and LeBron. But overall, I come away optimistic about what the Lakers did this offseason after losing Dorian Finney-Smith. Are these guys certainties? No. Ayton, always up and down. Smart, health issues. LaRavia, he's fine, not great. But overall, I do think they improved the team after the loss of Dorian Finney-Smith. But do you think that they've done enough to actually be considered finals contenders?
I don't know. I think my issue with the Lakers is it almost feels like the ceiling is a lot higher, but the floor might be lower, right? Because you've got guys who are question marks. I like Jake LaRavia too, but the other two guys, Marcus Smart, can he stay healthy? DeAndre Ayton, will he actually perform? And if Marcus Smart gets hurt and misses a lot of time, and if DeAndre Ayton ends up in the cycle of, what is he doing out there? Like, is he just not holding up on defense? Why does he look like he wants to get off the floor? Like, if you end up with those two floors, if those two, you know, signings don't hit, you're almost in a worse off position. It's hard to say that because you didn't really have a center last year, but Dorian Finney-Smith was rock solid and you lost that. And I mean, I don't know. It's just such an awkward position because they didn't get, like, at least in my opinion, and I like DeAndre Ayton. I like the idea of DeAndre Ayton, but they didn't really get the center that was like, yes, like, this guy's going to play. He'll play 80 games. He'll give you, you know, 10-8, like, solid defense. And that's all you really needed. And if Ayton's on the floor, he'll give you probably more than 10-8. But the problem is, like, how consistently will he do that? So I guess I'm a little shaky. I think if you have Luka and LeBron, you're going to be a deep playoff contender, borderline finals contender. Like, you'll have a chance to get there just because those guys are incredible. I worry about the floor of what they did this summer.
Yeah, I mean, I still think they're definitely behind OKC. I'd put them behind Denver. I love what Denver did this offseason. You turn Michael Porter yes. Jr. into Cam Johnson and Bruce Brown and Jonas Valanciunas and everything that they did. The Rockets obviously getting Kevin Durant, making the improvements they did on the roster. I'd still put the Lakers behind the Wolves as well. I think they're just in that kind of category with the Clippers, the Warriors, the Mavericks, kind of like this group of these older teams with a lot of ifs. I think they're in that group where you can't say there's a 0% chance that they're representing the West and the NBA Finals, but it's a much lower percent chance, I think, than that top group in the Western Conference. But of course, we also can't rule out the possibility of, you know, career best year for Luka.
Yeah.
You know, what if he does? What if, like, this is the summer where you see all these photos of him and he actually comes back and he is in the best shape of his life and he does have his first MVP season? What if Luka, the guy who's already been to an NBA Finals, dragged the team to the Western Conference Finals alongside Jalen Brunson? What if this is the year Luka is the MVP? Then it's like, okay, suddenly everything about the complexion of this Lakers team changes dramatically if you get that version of Luka. So I think that's really one of the biggest ifs of the whole offseason when you look at what teams did. If Luka is the MVP this year, suddenly the Western Conference landscape changes a lot.
It is wild to think that Luka hasn't won an MVP yet. I mean, he'd averaged like a 30-point triple-double for his entire career or something, and he just doesn't have one.
He could be better?
I know. The fact that he's still improving.
How could he be better?
That's ridiculous. I don't know. And there's also a chance that, like, playing with Luka does wonders for Ayton again after playing with Chris Paul. There's a chance that Marcus Smart, now that he's on a team that can actually have a chance at winning and not either an injured team or a tanking team, can play more games, and he stays healthy, and he makes an impact. And
good point.
There's just a lot of different factors that could go well. That's why I said I think the ceiling's higher. Like, I think DeAndre Ayton, like, at his best, is still a solid double-double, solid post-defender type player. It's just a matter of, can he do it? And if the Lakers get that, if the Lakers get that, they're in a great position. It's just a matter of will they, and I guess that's the bet they're willing to take.
We'll be right back. All right, Jack, let's talk about Summer League because you're a psychopath who spent every day at the gym in Las Vegas. That's why I wanted to bring you on because you saw a lot of these teams play. Mm-hmm. You covered the Celtics, but you were in the gym for everything. You saw Colin Knipple win MVP for the Hornets as they won the Summer League title. You were there for all of it. Mm-hmm. But let's start off. Let's do some Summer League superlatives here. We'll go through some of our players that stood out to us and whatnot. Starting off with the rookie that's obviously going to be good. Who do you got?
Nick Clifford is going to be a star. He is, you can't overreact to Summer League. And before I say any of these superlatives, like, you can't overreact to Summer League. I'll put that out there. Like, there's a chance that this means nothing. But watching Nick Clifford play against NBA, borderline NBA level talent, it is just so clear that this guy is going to be insane. Like, just the footwork from, like, there was one play I watched earlier in the week where he was in the corner. He had, the guy was stopping him from going baseline. And so he faked baseline, stepped back, and just, like, hit the easiest mid-range step back fadeaway you've ever seen in your life. And I'm just like, oh, like, he didn't even think about it. He wasn't even like, what should I do here? It's just, oh, you're going to take that away? See ya. And just step back. Like, just those things. The helping over in transition for a block at the rim, his ability to just get in the paint and kick it out like it's nothing. He draws 2-3 defenders at, like, he could snap his fingers and just tell the other team what to do. It was crazy to watch. And I stepped away from Summer League thinking, oh wow, Nick Clifford's going to be like a multi-time all-star in the NBA. Like, just watching him play, I fell hard for Nick Clifford at Summer League.
Dude, I'll tell you what. So, Nick Clifford, I forget where my final ranking was for him in the draft guide. I think I had him like 17, I want to say. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at pulling up right now. I ended up having him number 19 on my final board. I regret not keeping him at like 11. I think I had him at 11 at one point. Yeah. And it's just like, you kind of like start falling in love with other guys. Like, Carter Bryant, I moved ahead of him, who obviously looked tremendous on the defense for the Spurs. I moved certain guys ahead of him. I eventually moved into Senge ahead of him because he's younger and you fall in love with the younger guy and you move the older guy down and you start thinking about things differently. But damn it! Then you see him in Summer League and you're just all the way back in love again and you're like, 11 wouldn't have been high enough. Because, dude, like, you summed it up perfectly, Jack. It's not just the scoring. It wasn't just the fact that the ball was going into the hoop. It was just the footwork. To me, he looked quicker. He looked more fluid as a ball handler than he did even at the end of his season when they went to March Madness. The passing and NBA spacing looked even more developed again than it did in college. I just think this dude, like, I think the Kings have a weird team. They have a bunch of older guys, a bunch of guys who love the ball in their hands. And I wish you could see Nick Clifford in, like, the Kings offense of a few years ago with Fox and Sabonis and all the motion and movement, that year one beam team Kings. I wish Nick Clifford could play on that Kings team because I think he would be awesome right away. But, you know, in a vacuum, I still think this guy's going to be great. I just hope the Kings are able to put the right type of team around him.
Just give him the ball. Man, please. Come on.
There's a lot of mouths to feed there, man. But I love Nick Clifford. I think the dude's going to be really good. And you think he's going to be a star. I think Colin Knipple for the Charlotte Hornets, one of the more obvious answers. He goes fourth in the draft. He wins Summer League Finals MVP. For what it's worth, Kyle Filipowski was the MVP of the whole tournament. But Colin Knipple was of the final game with the Hornets winning the title and him scoring 21 points. I just think Colin, to me, he looked like he has dramatically worked on and improved his number one weakness on offense. As he detailed to me in our interview, he said, I got to get better off the dribble as a shooter. He looked like he got better off the dribble from a shooter. He had like a beautiful sidestep dribble three-pointer going to his right. He looked great and fluid going to the basket. He played with tempo. He looked like he could speed it up if necessary. I thought Colin looked like a more developed version of himself since we last saw him play with Duke's heartbreaking loss in the Final Four. And to me, I think Colin very, very obviously is going to be a good NBA player. And he showed enough off the dribble that you wonder, okay, we know we can do it as a shooter. We know we can hit these relocation threes. We know we can be clutch. He had to hit a big three in the final minute for the Hornets in that Summer League game in the final. We know he can shoot. We know he can pass. But the off the dribble scoring, to me, looked more developed, and that makes me feel like there could be a higher ceiling for him where he thinks, I want to play like Clay. Klay was never the playmaker that Khan can be. Never. I think Klay is a legend Hall of Famer in his own right. To compare anybody to him, you could say is sacrilegious. But Khan's got the shooting skill. Off the dribble is where he could really separate himself and be more than just a second star. And so we'll see what Khan ends up turning into. But what did you think about Khan?
He looked great. I mean, like you said, the shooting is one thing, but just the connectivity that he'll bring to an offense, like his ability to pump fake, drive those closeouts, create a play for somebody else, run the pick and roll himself, and then create for others. Like, on top of that, you call me a psycho. This guy got five stitches and still played in the summer league. Like, what are we what are we doing? He left the court with blood, you know, coming out of his face, and then was like, no, I'm gonna play in the summer league championship. I wrote it up for our Hornets site over at Fanside, and it's just like, this was a meaningless game. This is a point in the summer where the top rookies play one, maybe two games. Second year players get their lick in, then they leave. And if you're in the championship, maybe you play, maybe you don't. It is what it is. Khan Kanipal dove for a loose ball because he dropped it in the backcourt, ran into someone's elbow, got five stitches in his head, and then wore a headband and played in the championship and won MVP because he just wanted to win. Like, that's psychotic. That's exactly what the Hornets need. The Hornets, who are now approaching a decade-long playoff drought, you need guys who want to win at the highest level. You need guys like Khan Kanipal who are going to, you know, connect your offense, who are going to hit open threes, who are going to help take pressure off of Brandon Miller and LaMelo Ball if they can stay on the court. Like, I love the pick for the Hornets. I liked it at the time, and watching him play in summer league just solidified that.
Khan Kanipal, love him. And Nick Clifford as well. 15th, Nick Clifford was the, what pick did he get?
24.
He fell to 24. fell to 24. Khan went four. And so we have our first rounders there that we think are obviously going to be good. Who do you think was the most disappointing lottery pick?
Man, I mean, I liked what I saw out of Derek Queen. Seeing him get hurt stinks. Like, that's just, it's just a bummer to see him get hurt in the way he did, because I was very impressed with what he brought to the table. His teammate kind of disappointed me too. I didn't love what I saw out of Jeremiah Fears. Like, I was sitting down watching some Pelicans games, and I was like, I don't know. Like it's just the way he moves. He's a little bit slow. And so I'd say that whole Pelicans contingent was like kind of disappointing to me, especially considering they gave up the first round pick that they did in order to get Derek Queen. And listen, I was in the Cox Pavilion for the Hanson Yang versus Derek Queen show, because I was like, I'm here. I would like to watch this. Yeah, yeah. I'm ready to go. And Derek Queen kind of balled out on Hanson Yang. He was like giving him buckets. He was shoulder fadeaway. So I liked what I saw to him before the injury. But Jeremiah Fears, just like, all of this, he gets to the line a bunch. He's a great shot creator. He'll draw a bunch of free throws. They just weren't giving him the calls. And so that made me think, if they don't give him the calls in summer league, like, are the refs going to be more lenient in the NBA? Are they not going to give him the calls in the NBA? So like that's the whole Pelicans lottery contingent was like where I got a little, I don't know what's happening.
Yeah. Well, because for Queen, the defensive concerns were apparent. Offense, like you said, he showed slashes. We know he's a bucket getter. Defensively, there were concerns. He gets hurt. He's going to be reevaluated in 3 months. Like, 3 months is middle of October. So, like, he's going to miss training camp. He's not going to get a usual training camp as a rookie. That already sets back his rookie season after you gave up all that you did. And then Jeremiah Fears, like, usually for smaller guards, your first year is going to be a struggle. And so for him, even if he ends up a really good player in the long term, there's a chance the rookie season for both of these guys in a year they don't have their own first round draft pick. And talking about ifs, Zion, if Herb Jones coming back from injury, all these guys coming back from injury, Trey Murphy as well. If these guys come back and perform at the prior levels, if these guys can stay on the floor a la Zion, it could be an ugly year for the Pelicans. So I'd say I agree with you collectively. The New Orleans Pelicans were one of the more disappointing groups. And Derek Queen, I wish he were just in better shape. I wish he looked better defensively. Most disappointing to me isn't necessarily because of his play on the floor. It's the moment Noah Esenge got dunked on the break. Jack, were you at the gym for this moment?
I was writing. I was looking down and I just hear, whoa. I was like,
what? No. You didn't see it?
No.
Johnny Furphy. I saw the picture. Johnny Furphy cocking back. and putting it on Noah Sengay. I've always been somebody, let me make myself clear. I have always been somebody who appreciates a player willing to get put on a poster. Always.
Absolutely.
Appreciate when a player contests a shot, arms up, and they get put in the poster because it means you're putting in effort. You're trying to get a stop. Sengay was trying to get out of the way, and he got destroyed. And so Sengay, even though I think he had like 24 points in that game, if I remember correctly, and he had some solid moments for the Bulls in their summer league, that's most disappointing to me purely because of that moment, because it's going to show up every single time, no matter what he does.
That picture will live forever. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if Noah Sengay is out of the league in 3 years. That picture is still coming back every summer league cycle. Like, can anybody top this summer league picture? Like, it is. It's over. He's cooked. It is going to live forever.
Shout out to I think it was the Pacers team photographer who got that. So shout out to them for grabbing that. A great pick of Johnny Furphy and legendary picture of Noah Sengay. All right, so that we talked about most disappointing lottery pick. The rookie who's obviously going to be good. Who's the rookie second rounder that you liked? Who's somebody that stood out to you, maybe you weren't expecting to enjoy?
Yeah, speaking of the Pacers, Talon Peter, 54. He can hoop, man. He looked really good for that Pacers team. His jump shot is so quick. Like, he gets that off in like 0.5 seconds. It looked incredible. It was going in. It was the putting the ball on the floor a little bit. It was the cutting off the ball. Like, he's, you know, cutting in from the corner, is recognizing the gaps in the defense and getting himself easy buckets at the rim. And then just the intensity with which he played on the defensive end. I love a guy who'll pick up full court, who'll pressure the ball handler at half court, who isn't afraid, you know, take body to body contact. I mean, these offensive guards nowadays, and I mean, James Banks in the final game got ejected for swinging his elbows. Like, these small guards who don't care and will just get all up in you and play defense. I like that. So I left this saying like, okay, Talon Peter looks pretty good and Cam Jones looked good too, but like, you're coming away with those two guards for a season where you don't have Tyrese Haliburton. I'm not saying they're going to get like a ton of minutes, but you feel like, okay, we just took two okay swings. And I left Pacers summer league games being like, Talon Peter can play, man. He's pretty good.
Javon Small, I loved. I thought he looked great for the Grizzlies. You know, he's a smaller guard. He's only 6'1", you know, but he's got a 6'5 wingspan. I think he's the type of guy who plays a little bigger than his body, especially on defense. He's just so gritty. I thought that showed in summer league as well. He's just a pest on the defensive end of the floor. Then offensively, he just had some buckets where I'm like, okay, he looks like an NBA player to me. He looks like an NBA player. His ability to create off the dribble against tight defense, his ability to get to his three-pointer, he improved dramatically his final season in college as a shooter. He shot over 42% on his catch-and-shoot threes, looked much better off the dribble as well, and I thought it carried over. It didn't feel like it was just an outlier season for him his past year at West Virginia. And the thing is, it's like, you know, small samples, of course, but he shot 32% off the dribble on all jumpers, mid-rangers, three-pointers, as a senior in college. I don't have the number in front of me for what he did in summer league with the split tracking data between those two, but I would imagine it was a higher number there, and it looked like he did a good job at creating those shots, especially I think he had like some side dribble, step back, side dribble, three-pointer he had in the game. I think it was against the Clippers, if I remember correctly. I just thought he looked good, man. Javon Small, that Grizzly, like they cut one of my guys. They cut Zion Poland, who I really liked out of Florida. He was on a two-way with them last year. But Javon Small looked better. Simple as that. So Javon Small is my second rounder who stood out to me. Did you watch any Grizzlies at all, Jack?
I did. They played the Celtics once, so I got a chance to watch it. I did actually. I did these little like videos with Celtics players. So I went over the game with Jordan Walsh or some of his plays in it. And so I got to get some breakdowns with him. I did with Amari Williams. So I forget who it was, but Jordan Walsh, one of these, he goes, yeah, that screen was weak, man. He didn't want no smoke. He didn't want to hit me. It was just a Grizzlies guy like sticking his leg out 5 feet trying to set a screen. But I watched some Grizzlies. I thought they looked pretty good. I don't know. I'm trying to think. Javon Small definitely looked good. I'm trying to think if there's anybody
else
who's
early
stood out.
In summer league. That was the first game.
Yeah, I know. I'm like thinking way back. I'm thinking way back. This is everything's a blur. Jalen Wells obviously looked good. I mean, he was a finalist for
too good for summer league.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, why is he there? Yeah. But yeah.
So speaking about guys too good for summer league, who do you think is the second year guy that's set to make a leap?
So I watched Suns Hawks, and I remember this very vividly. And there was a big man on the Hawks, Jake Stevens, who I played for the Hornets last year. He actually showed some decent three-point shooting. He was all right. And Oso Iguodaro played him off the floor. Like, literally, his coach was like, you cannot be out there. I'm sorry, man. You got to get off. Oso Iguodaro, like, I need to paint this picture. They were both standing at, like, the elbow or maybe the wing. Like, I forget how far up the floor they were. He took one step, and he was already past Jake Stevens and at the rim. And listen, obviously, Oso Iguodaro is going to have to go up against much better competition in the NBA. But he beat a guy in one step, and then he dunked the ball. Like, it was one, two, done. Like, that is the play. It is over. It was the athleticism. It was his movement off the ball. It was his ability to drive to the hoop with the ball in his hands. It was the defense. It was the steals. It was the length. Like, Oso Iguodaro looked like he should have played 5 minutes in the first quarter of their first game. And then his coach said, "See, go to Phoenix. Go home. You're done. Like, stop playing." I love Oso Iguodaro. It's unfortunate that he is now playing in a center rotation with Kamon Bellawatch, Mark Williams, and Nick Richards ahead of him. Maybe run him at the four, but he doesn't really have the three-point shot for that. Oso Iguodaro looked like a guy who should be playing regular NBA minutes. He played a little bit of that last year for Phoenix when they were trying to figure out what they wanted to do. I just hope that the fact that they restructured their five spot doesn't mean Oso doesn't get minutes, because he is legit NBA talent.
You know, you bring up an interesting point, Jack, because, like, the two bigs there. I like Oso a lot.
Yeah.
He was one of my favorite second rounders last year. But two bigs, right? Like, I think the Suns had Malawatch jacking threes. I've always been of the belief that Mark Williams someday could shoot threes, because he's a good free throw shooter. In college, he had good touch on hook shots and, like, you know, little, you know, push shots on rolls to the rim. And he, you know, hit a few mid-range jumpers. I'm like, this guy could shoot threes someday. And I interviewed Mark Williams years ago. I think this was pre-draft. I interviewed Mark Williams, and he's like, yeah, you know, someday I'll work on it and hopefully extend my range. So all that said, they have two guys who could kind of maybe someday shoot jumpers, Malawatch and Mark Williams. Oso's not really that guy, but he is the type of guy who, you know, Malawatch too, who can step out in the perimeter a little bit. And so I wonder if with the Suns, as they kind of reshape this team around Devin Booker, they're not going to be a contender this year at all. They're probably going to miss the playoffs. But as they reshape this moving forward, I do wonder if maybe that's part of the vision for this team, to have a ton of versatility. They have Ryan Dunn. They drafted Rashear Fleming. They got Kobe Brea, a shooter. And then maybe with Iguodaro as a second-year guy, maybe you plug him in as kind of a versatile second front court piece next to their new centers, Kamon Malawatch and Mark Williams. But that would require one or both of those centers to someday be a reliable spot-up shooter. And you cannot rule it out, especially with Malawatch. With Mark Williams, it's more of just a super theoretical, probably not going to happen type of thing. I think for me, the guy who stood out the most, it was the MVP. So kind of obvious answer here, but I say him kind of because you look at, like, the all summer league teams, it is like all second year guys, like Ron Holland, Kyle Filipowski. It's all these guys who are coming back and doing the things that it's like, okay, good. You should be dominating summer league after a year in the NBA. And with Filipowski, the reason why I wanted to talk about him is because I thought he looked so freaking good. Like, I think it was like after the All-Star break, things just started to click for him in Utah last year. And he had like some 25-point games, some 30-point games. He was shooting almost 40% from three at one point the second half of the year. He was just looking like the dude that was once a top projected top 10 or a lottery guy. And then he goes to summer league and he continues dominating, as you'd hope from a second-year guy. He was so good, they shut him down, as you'd expect for a second-year guy. With Filipowski, man, like, you think about, like, the steals of the draft a year ago in the 2024 draft, and Filipowski fell to 32. And again, he was a guy people once thought could be a lottery guy, a top 10 guy. And that's always been on brand for Danny Ainge. He did it with Jared Sullinger. He did it with Avery Bradley. He did it with Gerald Green. Go back all through the years and his tenure as Celtics general manager. He always liked taking bets on these top five, top 10 high school recruits who ended up slipping. Kyle Filipowski, same thing, falling to number 32. And to me, like, I think there's something there with him that things have begun to click as a ball handler, as a three-point shooter. He's strong. He looks like he's gotten even quicker. I feel like with Utah, man, they might have gotten one of the steals, dude, in the second round a year ago. And it's not just because of the summer league. It's because of what happened during the actual NBA season
for
the Jazz. So I've got my eye on what they're building there, man, with Ace Bailey, Filipowski, and all the guards, Collier, and everything else they have there.
Yeah, I remember looking on Twitter when Filipowski was playing like this in Vegas, and everyone was like, oh, I just hope he can get minutes, you know, with Walker Kessler and Lauri Markkanen. And I was like, he should absolutely get minutes. Like, I think if anything, Filipowski should start to be a priority sooner rather than later in Utah. Like, that guy looked so good. Like you said, just too good to play in summer league. And he proved that. But just the offense in which he was shooting, he was getting to the rim, he was posting up, he was making plays a little bit. The defense looked solid. And I feel like that might have been a little bit of a concern. Like, how is he going to hold up? He looked good all over the floor for the Utah Jazz. And if you're a Utah, like, you really got to start prioritizing this young core of Ace Bailey, of Isaiah Collier, who looked pretty good in Vegas for stretches, Filipowski. Give him minutes. Give him as many minutes as you need to see what he's got. Because like you said, Danny Ainge likes that route of drafting these high school recruits. It works a lot of the time. Sometimes it's Romeo Langford. But it looks like it worked in Filipowski. And I know that Celtics fans are not too pleased after seeing Baylor Shireman shoot the way he did that Filipowski went two picks later.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I mean, I think for the Jazz, man, like Ace Bailey, you know, as well, Walter Clayton, they're going to be one of those fun young teams. They're going to suck. They're going to be bad.
League pass
team. They're going to have league, but they're going to be a fun league pass team. That's for damn sure. What did you think about first impressions of Hugo Gonzalez, speaking about the Celtics?
The Celtics rookie class left me a little disappointed. And I think it's important to take a step back, and realize they were 28th pick and 2 second rounders for a reason, right? Like they were almost certainly not going to blow you away at summer league, especially with the type of players they are. Like, none of them are these high volume shooters, these incredible ball handlers. Like, Hugo Gonzalez can do that, but he's probably mostly going to be an off ball cutter, a pretty high energy defender, and figure it out from there. He had this tendency to get lost in the lane a little bit in the summer league, where he was either going to the Euro step or the spin move, and neither of them worked too well. And so he ended up with some silly turnovers, some bad defensive plays, and it just looked like he was trying to move too fast. Amari Williams, the passing was incredible. I loved watching the passing. Again, I did a breakdown on it with him for one of the videos I make, but he looked a step slow on defense. The rebounding wasn't there. I know that was something I noticed when he was at Kentucky, of just like, he didn't box out super well. He didn't use his size well enough. If anything, the guy who I came away most impressed with relative to expectations was Max Shulga, and he didn't even shoot the ball well. It was just, he was very comfortable with the ball in his hands. He ran the offense pretty well, but the shot has to go in at the NBA level. So I thought the Celtics rookie class was a little bit disappointing, relative speaking.
Yeah, I thought so as well. Amari Williams, it's like the type of thing where you know he can pass. it's everything else. Like what will he become on defensive end of the floor? And I think with Gonzalez, the dude deserves time. Like, I don't think Celtics fans should overreact.
Yeah.
He's 19. He barely played this past year for Real Madrid. It's an adjustment coming from international. He also just finished his season, you know, not too long ago.
Yes.
Rather than some of these college guys who finished their years in March. And so I think he had less time, probably more tired legs. Big difference for him coming to NBA Summer League than for some of the college guys that have had a lot of time off. And so I think, you know, with the Celtics, it's interesting. Were you surprised to see them mentioned as one of the teams interested in Ben Simmons?
I was surprised. I was a little bit, very surprised, you could say. I get it. Right, because realistically speaking.
Do you get it?
Listen, I get it from their first. If you are going to take a chance on one of these reclamation projects, it's going to be a team like the Celtics, who don't really know what your ceiling is. You don't really know if you're going to be able to compete with Nemish Keita as your projected starting center and George Niang as your projected starting four.
The answer's no. Like, you don't. Exactly, you know you won't.
Exactly. So the point is, like, best case, Ben Simmons turns into this decent connector you can play some switchable lineups with. Like, he's never going to be anything close to the all-star he once was, but maybe he gives you, like, 7, 6, and 5 or something in 25 minutes a night. Worst case, he's on a minimum. You never play him. You buy him out at the deadline. Like, that is truly the worst case scenario. So I understand in theory Do I think they should do it? No, just play your young guys. Stop trying to cook in the free agency world. Like, just play your young guys, sign another young guy if you want. But 28 year old or 29, however old Ben Simmons is now, probably not the answer.
Yeah, Mark Stein had reported on the Stein line that the Suns, Knicks, Kings, and Celtics were the four teams with some interest in Ben Simmons. Personally, I'm hoping for Boston for proximity reasons so I can increase the probability of getting him on my podcast.
Okay.
Increase chances.
Okay, I like that. No, that's good.
I have long wanted to interview Ben Simmons and have been denied many, many times, understandably so. Because I want to talk about how he shoots with the wrong hand.
Just want to talk. I hope you get that chance. I hope that happens. I will be tuned in.
Do you think Ben Simmons shoots with the wrong hand, Jack?
Is there a right hand for him? Like, should he? I mean, like, should he shoot with either hand? And hey, you're talking to I was a big Ben Simmons believer. I was in. Like, I was fully bought in. I'm like, no, he's still got juice. He's still got juice. And maybe a crazy part of my brain still thinks he will. But in my mind, my perfect Ben Simmons is just play him as a center. Let him be one of the best passing bigs in the NBA and one of the most versatile switching bigs in the NBA. In Ben Simmons' mind, that is not the world. And so I think me and Ben Simmons personally would disagree on that front.
Hey, I mean, look, I think with the Clippers last year, I mean, look, they upgraded for a reason with what they needed behind Ben Simmons at center, getting behind Zubac, Al Lopez. They drafted Yannick Cohen and Niedenhauser as well, traded for John Collins. Big time upgrades over Ben Simmons. But I think that's all he is.
Yeah.
At this point. He's a dribble handoff guy who does nothing on offense besides that. Reluctant to score at all. It's honestly kind of sad to see like what he's turned into at this point, because even as critical as I was of the jumper and the flaws building around prime Ben Simmons, he was an awesome defensive player.
Incredible.
Awesome.
The best.
So versatile.
The best.
Yes, he's so great. He was great. And then so good as a playmaker as well, especially in the break and the open floor. I mean, the dude pre-draft drew, you know, Magic Johnson comparisons unfairly. But you get why when he's 6'10" and he could pass like that.
Yes.
And it's just too bad that back injury has really derailed his entire career. And I hope for his next situation, whether it's Boston, Sacramento, Phoenix, or whoever it ends up being, that it ends up being like a good reclamation.
I'm rooting for him.
And he's, yeah, me too.
Actively,
I am.
Yes.
I'm rooting for Ben Simmons, and I look forward to seeing where he ends up deciding to go. Jack, appreciate you joining me today, man. Where can we find all your stuff?
Yeah, appreciate you. I co-host a podcast, How About Them Celtics. You can check that out. My written work is at hardwoodhoudini.com. I'm working on a few small things about the Celtics rookies. Those will probably trickle out throughout the summer. And then my videos, excuse me, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Jack Simone NBA. You can find those there. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it, Kevin.
You still got that dry Vegas air cracking.
I've tried so hard. I drink water. It just won't go away. It kills me. But it's.
Did you do anything else in Vegas besides the gym? Did you go to any shows? Did you go to the Sphere and see the Backstreet Boys? Like I did.
No, I'm jealous though. I wish I did. I went to the Strip maybe a total of three times. Wow. I hooped. I was at like a. It was like. Writers, some other people run at the Tarkanian Gymnasium. I think that's what it was. So I played a little basketball there. I played pretty well, so I was happy about that.
Food, restaurants,
food,
anything.
So I was with Noah Dalzell and Bobby Karitsky, who also cover the Celtics. Like we hung out, we shared a hotel room, etc., to save money. We went to a couple sushi places. We went to a couple vegan restaurants because Noah's vegan, and then. Not really. I was at the gym. I was at like I get like 70% of the time I was at the gym or the pool. The pool was fun, but we went to this place called Gorilla Sushi, which is just like a random all you can eat sushi cafe. But we went three times, and I now have a punch card for where the 11th all you can eat sushi is free. But we were trying to get to the 11th, and it's at 9, and so I'm saving this for next year so we can
next
get
year. The free one. Make sure you don't lose it and take a photo, like just in case here. You lose it. They might accept the photo version.
They remembered us. They got to the end and they're like, "Oh, you're going to hit the 11th one." We're like, "Yeah, we're here." And then we just.
Oh God, Jack! Appreciate you joining me. I'll have to join you maybe extra at Gorilla Sushi.
Please,
11th time. Thank you, man. Appreciate it,
yes, sir. Thank you.
All right, joining me now to discuss some more summer league takeaways is S. Barahini. All right, joining me now is Esmer Arhini from The Athletic. Es, how you doing, man?
I'm good, man. We were just talking about concerts at the Sphere. Now you got me thinking if I should go to Backstreet Boys.
You gotta go. You gotta go. I mean,
considering
it. You said you went to Coldplay last night. You gotta go back to back. Backstreet Boys.
I don't know if Backstreet Boys can top Coldplay.
No, but like the Sphere tops everything.
Right.
I'm going for the Sphere first.
Yeah.
Backstreet Boys second. Of course, you know, I'm born in 90.
Yeah.
So like I grew up with the Backstreet Boys. So I'm very excited to see them. It'll
okay,
be cool.
give me the Sphere experience. What does that look like?
I mean, like it's first of all, like the whole like think about where we are. We're at Thomas and Mack Center for some NBA Summer League.
Yeah.
It is loud. Right? It's loud. Like, there's people everywhere at the Sphere. In the concourse, it's, like, dead quiet. It's
right.
weird
yeah.
in a way. It's, like, super futuristic looking. So as soon as you walk in, they have these robots you can talk to. And, well, it's, like, the concessions food is great. I'm going to have my dinner there tonight.
Nice.
It's great food there. And then you walk in, and you see the screen. And you're like, oh, what?
Wow.
But then the show starts, and it blows you away even
Isn't
more.
Isn't it crazy that James Dolan made that
thing? I know. I'm always going to be a James Dolan fan now,
yeah.
regardless.
I want his. If I go to the Sphere, I want to see his band live.
Oh, no. You don't want to see his band. I would go to see any band, any artist to sit at play Sphere, including James Dolan and whatever the name of the band is. But
cool.
To me, the most impressive thing about Sphere is the sound. The sound is more even impressive than the video.
Okay, I'll consider him. So if you see the Backstreet Boys pictures for me.
Yes, I went. It means you went.
Yeah.
Who was also impressive today, this is day three of Summer League, was Carter Bryant for the San Antonio Spurs. Once again, his defense, dude. I mean, he's playing like it's the NBA Finals. And yeah. so you see the appeal for San Antonio taking him with their second first-round draft pick, adding him to a team with Victor Wembanyama already, Jeremy Sochan, Stephon Castle, Dylan Harper, who we'll talk about in a minute, among other great defensive players. What are your early impressions of Carter Bryant, and how do you see him fitting into the Spurs ecosystem?
Yeah, I'm not sure if we talked about this when I came onto your pod last, but I love Carter Bryant. Like, he was the guy that I would have picked if, from the Raptors' perspective, covering them. It just fit that OGN and OB sized hole in my heart from the Raptors perspective. But I think what he does defensively, the tenacity that he has at the point of attack, how versatile he can be. He had a possession against Cooper Flagg where he got beat off the dribble, but then recovered and blocked him off the backboard. He also had a couple of possessions where he would cause a deflection, rotate out to a shooter, basically X out in the corner by himself. There's so many opportunities. It's crazy.
He's so advanced.
Yeah, he's very advanced. And the offense would come along, still hasn't
I think he was 0 for 7 today.
Yes.
As impressive as he was defensively, he was equally unimpressive on offense. But we can ignore that.
We could actually chalk that. I would chalk that up to like summer league, figuring out his spots. I feel like he's more of an off-ball player to start his career. And that those type of guys tend to struggle in summer league generally. I think he will eventually be a decent guy attacking closeouts. A decent guy knocking down his three-point shot, was a pretty good shooter in Arizona in, you know, kind of the minutes that he had, despite not playing a ton. Defensively, though, like a monster, a guy who can be an all-defense level player eventually.
And he just looks big. He just looks massive. Like in
that
person,
next to Wemby and the versatility that they have at the point of attack with De'Aaron Fox, Stephon Castle, Dylan Harper. You can see the infrastructure there for a really, really talented defense.
I mean, look, if Wemby plays 70-plus games, you know, they added to their front court as well. He has better backups than he's ever had before, Olynyk being the most recent addition. They added Kornet.
Yep.
So Kornet, you put those two on the floor together, you have Twin Towers, or you play with just one. You have Olynyk and Wemby. You have 2 7-footers who can space the floor. They have so many different front court combinations now, and they can be great defensively or very good defensively even when Wemby's off the floor. The Spurs could be a top 5 defense next season. The question to me is going to be still, what level do they reach offensively? Because my whole pre-draft issue with the idea of Dylan Harper, Stephon Castle, and De'Aaron Fox is like, is there enough shooting on this team? And you also factor in Jeremy Sochan on the team. Now Carter Bryant, who's up and down as a shooter as well. Keldon Johnson's still on the roster, among others. There's a lot of like average or below average shooters. And with Dylan Harper, I will say he had hit the side of the backboard today.
He did.
He did not do a lot from the perimeter.
Yep.
But he did show the things that made him a number 2 pick, and that was getting to the rim at will.
Yeah.
He was dominant finishing at the basket, and he made plays defensively too.
Yeah, I thought some of the playmaking really popped too in the pick and roll. He would like a passing window would evaporate, but he would somehow slip it through.
Do you see the one in transition he had? It was like a cool little kick ahead, but it's just like so smooth off the dribble. Just like, I think it was, from my vantage point, it looked like it was through a tight
window. Yeah, it looked like he was threading a needle. Yeah. It's really impressive what he can do there. And so I think some of the three-point shooting flaws can be kind of massaged, maybe, you know? I know you have your concerns. I think the concerns are valid because if you think about Stephon Castle, De'Aaron Fox, those guys at the point of attack, how much space is Wemby going to have to operate offensively?
He's got to get Wemby to the basket as much as possible, yes.
But hey, maybe he's the guy who wants to take the shots right behind the arc. You know, pick and roll, those guys get downhill, and now you have an option to kick it out as your release valve in Wemby. I feel like there is a world in which Dylan Harper can thrive as maybe a three, like a off-ball ball handler for them, a guy who can attack off of closeout.
Is that for his best, though, when we see how
it's tough,
great he is just weaseling his way into the paint and then overpowering people on the next possession? Like, he's just so versatile.
He getting in the rest, though. Let's think of it like this. There's going to be moments where, because I think Stephon Castle, as much as he improved throughout the year last year as being a pick-and-roll ball handler, I think he's best suited off-ball, a guy who's like cutting to the basket, attacking closeouts with his length.
I agree. He's like their Iguodala.
Yeah,
that type of guy. That kind of scar.
So if you have that as your guy, and I think Fox is going to handle the ball a lot, there is room for another guy to be there. And I don't think it's going to be Jordan McLaughlin. It's going to be Dylan Harper. You know what I mean? There's a world where he can handle the ball a lot for them.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like sometimes I'm on an island when it comes to like expressing concerns about Dylan Harper, who's like this dominant at-rim finisher.
Awesome.
He was awesome today. It's just, I mean, I feel like I'm alone sometimes when I should express my concerns, and that's because of just what's at stake with Victor. And I hope Dylan comes out whenever we see him again in Summer League, and assuming he plays again, and I hope he shoots the hell out of it. I hope he shoots the hell out of it as a rookie with the Spurs, and I hope, you know, people are, you know, old takes exposing me for even raising the question. I want that to happen because of how much I want to see Victor reach his full potential. So that's why I expressed concern about it. But ultimately, first impressions, if this was ever your first time watching Dylan Harper today, you'd be thinking this guy is awesome. He had a great block on Ryan Nemhard and transition. He just looked overpowered him at a 6'5". He was so much bigger than him.
Yeah.
He was impressive. Both Spurs rookies, I thought, were very impressive. I want to talk about Yang Hansen. He was the biggest surprise pick of the first round. Absolutely. Portland taking him in the mid-first. People thought he might fall to the late first. I talked to sources around him that thought second round's most likely. And then boom, top 20, Yang Hansen off the board. And this is going to a team that drafted Dominic Clingan last year.
Yep.
We see in his debut, he had 5 assists, ton of highlight reel passes. He looked like Chinese Jokic. Yes. That nickname is going to get thrown out all year long.
Thrown out.
Yep. It will. How do you see Clingan and Yang fitting in that front court, us?
I don't know. Truthfully, I don't know. Because I think Yang needs to improve as a guy who can score them all. He has nice touch. He has really nice feathery touch. He hit a three, but it was off the glass in a really loud spot. If he can improve in that area, then I can see a world in which those two play together. But I think it makes more sense for Yang to be the backup to Clingan. Because right now, one of the questions I have with Clingan generally is he is great for a 20-minute to 25-minute game. But can he get to 30? Can he get to 35 minutes? And that's where you can throw out a Rob Williams, or he can throw out a Duop Reef, or he can throw out a Yang Hansen.
R.I.P. D.A. Ayton.
I know, right? Yeah, no more.
No longer an option.
No, not an option. And honestly, right, maybe for the best, right?
Sign off.
Yang is going to be a fun player. Regardless of how effective he is as a rookie, he's going to show off a lot of tertiary skills. The playmaking obviously pops. If they do put the ball in his hands with the bench, they have the cutters to work around him. I think of like Matisse Thybulle, obviously Tumani Kamara, Denny Abdia, a good cutter. All these guys work so well off of the ball.
Sure.
That maybe there's a vision to, hey, just get the ball in this guy's hands. Yeah, he can be Chinese Jokic. Why not?
I mean, look, and Clingan has it.
I can't believe I said that.
I mean, look, straight face. By saying that, you're not saying he's going to be one of the 15 greatest players ever, or a multi-time MVP. What you're saying is that he can do some of the things like Jokic, just like Sabonis does.
Yeah.
Like Şengün does.
Even to a lesser degree. I watch it with the Raptors with Jakob Poeltl, Isaiah Hartenstein with the Oklahoma City Thunder. There are a lot of NBA teams that will like to put the ball in big man's hands just because the size allows them to create.
Yes.
And Yang can do that.
I look at bigs as like a lubricant for an offense. Okay. Just keeps things flowing. Right. Just keeps like things.
Nice reference.
It just keeps things flowing. That's what they do. They're connective pieces. They make the smart play. They make the right plays. People orbit and cut around them. And I think with Yang, that's the appeal. And with Klingon, too, because Klingon, he's not just a rim protector. He's got some feel. He's got some intelligence on the floor like Yang does. So the Blazers, I'm sure their vision is to have those guys on the floor for 48 minutes of every game where they can play that way with a big. I do wonder, though, considering the amount of two bigs we've seen, most times teams that are playing too big, they do it with one big that shoots. Do you think it's possible we could trend towards a world in which it's like back in the 90s, two Twin Tower guys that are, you know, one on the inside, and nowadays one is just dribble handoffs, kind of Hartenstein style on the outside, even without the shooting threat. Is that possible?
I think of offensive rebounding as the main key here.
Houston
with Şengün and Adams. That could work.
Yeah.
That's the way you're building. And honestly, the way Şengün works kind of does remind you of Yang Hansen in the way that high post, short roll area, he can make plays for you, catch with his soft touch and finish around the basket. If that guy can be there for you, Klingon is easily an incredible offensive rebounder, can win possessions for you consistently. Yeah, there's a vision for that. I could see it. You need to have elite shooting next to those guys, and that's where Portland might fall. Similar to how Houston struggled in the half court last year, where they don't have the requisite shooting around Şengün and Adams to be able to survive offensively. How do you do that for Portland?
For sure. With Houston, I mean, you add Kevin Durant, you hope Reed Shepard continues stepping forward like he did in his first game with the Houston Rockets Summer League team. But I do think there's something there. I'm just intrigued by...
At the very least, he's going to be fun, man.
Yes, exactly. Portland will be very fun. And I want to talk to you about the Raptors, Rahul, to let you go, because...
Yeah.
We have not seen at the time of recording Colin Murray-Boreals yet. They're from their first-round pick. But we did see Elijah Martin, the 39th pick in the draft, who was one of my favorite pre-draft players out of Florida. He did so many of the things in his debut with 16 points, 5 assists, 5 boards, 2 steals, and a massive dunk. He looked like the Florida version of Elijah Martin. What were your impressions of him?
Yeah, he looked like a man amongst boys. I mean, obviously, he's a five-year player in college, so he's physically grown out. Like, he knows in all sets. He's a ball runner, so wide. And, like, he understands how to use his body, both on offense and on defense. And I think the great thing that he popped with in his first summer league game, and also as he did all of his final year in Florida, he shot the ball well and did it in a variety of ways, off the catch, off of movement, kind of above the break shots that have a little bit of difficulty to them. If he can do that for the Raptors, he easily plays a role for them next year just because they need shooting in a major way.
I just think he's going to be a winner. I just think he won in North Florida. He won at Florida. He won a national title at Florida.
Yeah.
I just think what we saw in these playoffs this year with Indiana and OKC is so many guys just play hard from the opening tip to the final buzzer, then always play fast.
Yeah.
They play with intensity, and depth mattered more than ever in the deep end of postseason with those two teams. And so, like, it's different every year. Like, next year it might be Denver in the finals, and they're talking about the need for a big or even two bigs, because if they're putting Jokic out there with Valanciunas or Jokic and De'Ron Holmes, like, things can change. But this year it was about speed and depth, and I don't think that is any different than Boston or Erie. Boston, they were a deep team as well. They play the same way, start to finishing games.
Yeah.
So I just think guys like Elijah Martin, this year's playoffs really helped them out in terms of their draft stock.
Yeah.
Do you feel that way with a guy like him as well? With, like, he's a playoff player?
Yeah. I mean, like, especially in the second round, the way that NIL has worked to kind of shift the way the second round works in general, there's not a lot of freshman guys coming out as much because they want to get paid or they have the opportunity to get paid in college, right?
Big time money, right? More than what's like
sometimes. Yeah, actually, more, most of the time, more than what you can get
every flyer out.
And so it makes sense for guys to draft older players. I want to ask you this, though, Case. Okay. A lot of national media folks are like lower on the Raptors than in general. And as a person who covers them, naturally, I feel like I'm a little bit more optimistic than consensus. How do you feel? about what this Raptors team can be next season. I also interviewed Colin Murray-Boyles today, who was like really excited about what he can provide. How do you feel?
It just feels like a bunch of like solid pieces, but how does it all fit?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I like a lot of the players individually. I like Murray-Boyles. I still like Brandon Ingram.
Yeah.
I like Quickley. I like Poeltl. I like a lot of the pieces individually, but how does it all mesh together? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
So I think like the way they closed the year, solid. They weren't horrible.
Yeah.
During the season, I mean, they missed the playoffs and cracked the East. So maybe they weren't
wins. Some, is not the best.
So, right. But they weren't 19 wins.
Right.
They weren't Washington. Yeah. I think they'll probably be playing. Is that fair? I don't think better than that, though.
I think it's a nice, fair take. My optimistic take is like, if this works offensively, because defensively, I think there's a world in which they can be a pretty successful defense with the amount of length and athleticism.
They're going to be really good defensively, actually. Yeah.
Offensively is the big question. I think the questions about who is going to share the ball. Raptors head coach Darko Rajakovic has really enabled this team to move the ball a lot. They try to lead the league in assists consistently. How does that work when you have Brandon Ingram on the roster and RJ Barrett on the roster, Scottie Barnes, IQ?
Can those guys evolve? Because like with Ingram, go way back to when he was at Duke. He was more of a playmaker. Like, heck, he could playmake then.
I thought like he is markedly improved.
I hate
to pick and roll as a playmaker too. So can he now adapt that to what Toronto has? That's the question.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's like a lot, many, many questions with this team, but you know, Masai Ujiri is gone, obviously, but what Bobby Webster has assembled there with this team, it feels like it's just a lot of good pieces.
Yeah.
And then you figure out what you want to keep.
Yeah.
To me, I think just have a bunch of guys and this is a tryout year.
Yeah.
Is the way I look at it. And okay, well, maybe Ingram doesn't work out, or Ingram does.
Right.
And then you keep him. And maybe you just like Murray-Boyles is shining in a way that you don't expect, and it means you might do something else. Or
yeah, you know, you're banking on some of these younger players to play real minutes for you. That might be the swing here between the Raptors actually being a playoff team versus Xavier Flanty.
Yes. Thank you so much, man. Appreciate you coming on my pod multiple times this year.
I got you.
Great to meet you in person, man. Hope to see you at the Sphere tonight.
Back to your list.
Man, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate
I got you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Big thank you to Jack and S for joining me today. Thanks to Mike and Amy for producing us. Thanks to you for giving us a listen. Enjoy your weekend, everybody.